Welcome to B2B Healthy Copy Talks, the podcast that blends together marketing strategy, copywriting, and messaging tactics for the B2B fitness, health, and wellness industries. As a former personal trainer, award-winning writer for major health and fitness magazines, and an online fitness course creator, I know firsthand the challenges of marketing within these industries. So whether you're a seasoned copywriter, a savvy marketer, or an industry expert, you'll find valuable insights in every episode. From B2B SaaS providers and marketing experts to fitness entrepreneurs, I'll bring you interviews and discussions that spark creativity, drive growth, and jack up your professional game. We'll explore the specific challenges within the B2B world, how to stand out among the competition, and increase conversions in every area. Let's dive in. My guest today is Amy Posner. Amy is a particularly special guest because I have known her for many years, since before I even became a copywriter. And we'll get into that story briefly at the beginning. But Amy has been a serial entrepreneur, much like myself, for 3 decades, and she's coached thousands of creative freelancers like me. She says she loves helping people crack the code of their business and find out what it is that they're really best at. What is their thing to do? And she says her happy place is in front of a fire with a good book or at a restaurant, having great food, drinks, and conversations, which I can relate to as well. So today we're going to jump into a couple of different things. The number one thing is how to copyright, how to be a copywriter for different types of niches. So how do you know when it's time for you to niche down? How do you niche down? What are the pros and cons of it? And what are the differences when you copyright for these different niches, if anything? So let's jump right in. Hey there, fellow marketers. Before we dive back into the conversation, I've got a game changer for your content strategy. Imagine a world where the headache of coordinating, reviewing, and approving content for social media, blogs, and newsletters just disappeared. If you're struggling with team collaboration on content, I get it. We've all been there, and it's precisely why you need to hear about this tool. It's called Planable. Planable is revolutionizing and raising the bar on the way teams collaborate on content. Imagine crafting and seeing your posts exactly as they'll appear live across different platforms, all from one dashboard. And the beauty of Planable is it drastically cuts down the approval time for your posts. What used to take hours can now be wrapped up in minutes. Whether you call Planable your unfair advantage or a secret weapon in your content creation toolbox, it's changing the content collaboration game. With this beautifully designed interface, you'll wonder how you ever did content planning without it. So if you're ready to upgrade and streamline your approach to content creation, head over to planable.io and sign up for a free plan today. That's planable.io. And here's the cherry on top. Planable is giving you 30% off for the first 3 months when you upgrade to any plan that fits your needs. That's right, any plan. So all you need to do is use the code PLANABLE30 at checkout. That's PLANABLE, the number 30, at checkout, and you're all set to transform the way you manage your marketing content. That's Planable 30 to lock in your 30% discount for the first 3 months. And now back to our show. Amy, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to talk to you. This will be great.
Linda.
Yeah, it's always great to see you. I'm
psyched to be here.
You know, what's funny is I was looking through my emails to see when was the first time we connected, because it was before I even got into copywriting. Remember, I had my fitness course, and I contacted you blindly. I think I just did like a Google search for a conversion copywriter, and we went back and forth, and that's actually what intrigued me about conversion copywriting. So, and then we reconnected back in 2020. So it's been like a long time. So it's for at least 5-6 years.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that first connection around what you were doing then. I totally forgot about that. And now I remember it really vividly, but right, it's been a while.
And what I remember most is that you didn't push me at all, because I said to you, you know what, after talking to you and emailing back and forth, that I did not have my service really outlined. It wasn't a strong offer. And you said, if you don't have your offer really solidified, then this, you know,
any kind of sales page or anything is going to be a waste of money. And so you're very honest with me. But it made me think, maybe I want to be a conversion copywriter because it seemed like a fun thing. And that's what started that whole ball rolling. So
isn't that funny? It's, you know, it's like it's often that just like this little just like inkling of a thing, right? Or somebody says something and suddenly like the light bulb goes on. I love that.
I know. And that's what I think is so fun about, like, you know, people say, what gets you up in the morning? It's like, because 1 minute, one day can change your whole life. I mean, sometimes it's not always good, but hopefully it is. But right. You know, it's those things. And so speaking of that, so we talked, you and I have gone back and forth a little bit recently about niching down, because I recently mm-hmm. niched down from being kind of a broad B2B SaaS copywriter to really going into my background, which is fitness and health. And that was largely at your suggestion, because you said you've done so much in this. And you had said that you also have niched down and changed niches throughout your career. Can you talk a little bit about what you've changed and what inspired you to make these changes?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I thought of myself, you know, and as a copywriter, I was a generalist for a really long time. And I think of, it's funny because you say niche and I say niche, but I guess change. No, there's two different ways to pronounce it. But so there's a couple of, like in my mind, there's a couple of ways to niche. Like there's verticals, like, you know, industry verticals. There's things like, you know, are you B2B or B2C? Mm-hmm. And then there's in the types of copy that you offer. So, right? So like all of those can be seen as niches. And so for me at first, I was very much a generalist in what I would write because I wanted experience in everything because I didn't know what I liked and I didn't understand the marketplace and who bought what and what was out there. So I wanted like the buffet, and then I would decide, you know, what I wanted to cook for dinner each night once I'd experienced like all the little tastes, right? So, but I started being a generalist copywriter in the information marketing niche. So that was my niche at first, and I did a lot of different kind of work inside of that. I did a lot of sales pages, landing pages, marketing funnels, emails, you know, all the things. And then at a certain point, I realized that, and here's the thing, one of the reasons I was a generalist is because I love learning new things. And yeah. I liked unpacking all the things and figuring them out. And plus, I didn't know where I wanted to be. But after a certain point, I got a lot of experience under my belt, and I realized I was reinventing the wheel all the time. Right? Because if you're working in one space this day and the next space that day, like if you can do it, you have to do a lot more research and a lot more deep digging though and deep diving. And that's not efficient time-wise. So right. I was like, okay, this isn't so. So now I'd had experience in all these different vertical niches. And one of the things what I really like writing is I like sales copy. I like stuff that's close to the money, partly because the clients really value it and partly because you can actually see results and you can kind of tweak and, you know, it gives you a reason to stick around and work with people long term. It just really suited me.
Yeah.
But I didn't know who I wanted to do that for. And I wasn't sure who would buy them and who would buy them really readily. And what about the people who already had them and did they need them? And what about the people who didn't have them? Did they know they needed them? So there was a whole bunch of things to sort of unpack in there. So I chose to niche in funnels, which we know are not even a set thing because funnels can be comprised of different pieces. But I tested that out then in different vertical markets. So I was sort of not, you know, which is okay. Like you can be scientific in that if you keep all your information separate.
Right.
And what I mean by being scientific is figuring out like where, you know, what's the best place for you to actually be. Mm-hmm. So I was doing things that other people weren't doing because I'm always a fan of going where people aren't. So I went into like the quote professions, like, you know, insurance, real estate, legal, things that are traditionally pretty boring in the marketing space. But if you could find some open-minded sort of progressive thinking marketers, then they'd be really interested in what I offered. So then I had to kind of niche down to figure out like, who would those people be? Right. So there were a lot, there's like a sort of a lot of levers and a lot of subtlety, I think, in figuring out a niche. So that's kind of big picture. That's what I've done. And I mean, a little, you know, tip of the iceberg, but
yeah. Well, how did you, so you were generalist and you niched down, however you want to pronounce it. But was it something that kind of happened organically? Like you were like, all right, this is, you know, I want to do this because I think that I could do better. Like, what's that saying? The riches are in the niches. That's when you have to make it rhyme, by the way. You can't say riches are in the niches. But
the riches are in the niches. Yeah, that doesn't work either. Okay.
But was it because you thought you could do better in that way, or you had more of an interest in those subjects?
You know, no, at that point, I didn't, it wasn't so much for me about what I had an interest in. Like, of course, I wanted to have an interest in what I was doing, but it wasn't so much the exploration of the early days. Now it was what's more efficient. Mm-hmm. Because what I, you know, as I, you know, got the skills and built, you know, built all these different pieces, I realized, you know, that I had certain financial goals and that if I wanted to achieve them, I was going to have to get streamlined. Because I think that's, and I think that's one of the reasons too, niche, because, you know, when you do something repeatedly, you get faster at it.
Right.
And that's one of the best levers to lean on for making more money. Because, you know, if something took you, you know, 10 hours last year and it takes you 5 this year, well, you've effectively doubled your revenue, or maybe more, because maybe you've raised your rates too. But so that was a real driver for me. It's like, okay, how do I take my time and get really efficient about it? And it's, you know, deliver the right value to the right people so that they're willing to pay for it. And now I was like trying to dial in my financial equation more, I guess. And that I was using it for that purpose rather than discovering what it was I wanted or could do or even interested me.
Hey there, fellow marketers. If you're anything like me, juggling multiple platforms for meetings, webinars, and calendar bookings can make you feel like tossing your laptop out the window. It can be a nightmare just setting up a simple team meeting. Am I right? Thankfully, there's a better way. I'm talking about Sessions. Sessions is an all-in-one scheduling, meeting, and presentation software that is super user-friendly. And it's so much more than a Zoom alternative. Sessions is like having a personal assistant for all your meetings. It provides meeting notes, makes it easy to share documents and screens, distills key points for quick overviews, and makes it easy for everyone to work on one board. One reviewer raved about Sessions, saying, "In a world where remote work and virtual meetings are becoming the norm, Sessions stands out as a platform that takes video conferencing to the next level." Are you ready to transform your meetings into more productive collaborations? If so, head on over to sessions.us today and try it out for free. That's sessions.us. Don't miss out on the platform that will soon be a leader in the webinar and virtual meeting space, allowing you to have better video meetings. Visit sessions.us today. And now back to our show.
And that makes sense, because it's like when I decided to, you know, specialize in fitness and health, a big reason why I decided to do it is because it eliminated a learning curve. Like if I were to go into a subject that I knew nothing about, I'd have to do all the background research. Like, and we do background research for every client, but when it's something like when I did content writing for magazines, and I would get in the door because I had so many bylines and so many of the big publications that I could reach out to anybody. And they'd be like, oh, you know, they drop literally doctors, you know, people who were really hard to reach because they knew I knew the language. And they've said this to me, you know, I know that you know my audience, especially with the fitness. And so, you know, I know you're not going to misquote me. And I know that you can fill in the blanks if there are blanks to be filled in. I mean, it's different with copywriting because you really can't fill in blanks. It's like, unless it's just, you know, wording something a particular way. But yeah, it's interesting that you say that. So it's like, because for me, the only thing I avoid is like the high tech, like something I once wrote an article for a computer magazine. It was a disaster. And I was told, oh, you can write for anything. You know, this is a content was an article. You can write for any field, anything, as long as you know, speak to the right people, you do the right research. Well, I'm talking to people and I didn't know what they were talking about. So it's like they were getting into these, you know, these acronyms and everything. I would write down like everything I had to look up, but it was clear I didn't know that field. That's the last time I wrote for that publication. I think it was
It's so interesting you say that because it's so the opposite of fitness, where it's like, you know, you could do it in your sleep practically, not the work, but like your knowledge. You know, we could shake you awake at 3 o'clock and say, hey, what about this? And you'd be like, well, no. You know, it's just funny. It's really, And when you try and write somewhere that you're not comfortable or you're not interested, it's just, it doesn't fit. It's funny. It just, Yeah.
And people know it. I mean, that's the worst part is you can't even hide it. You know, like yeah. I know that I've been in interviews where it was, you know, when you get on the phone with a prospect, you don't know if you're going to be a match or a fit or not. Yeah. And I know that there's been a couple that were really, I was not a fit. And I could tell by the questions I asked and by the reactions I was getting that they were thinking, she has no clue. So that's why I said, you know, I'm going to stop doing all that. It's just embarrassing. So,
you know. Let's back out right now and just like see you later.
Let's just both agree to disagree on this. So, okay. So when you're writing for, say you have a new client and it's a niche that you are unfamiliar with, is there something that you change in your process of either research or the actual writing or just the process that you use in order to get the best copy? Like, do you change it according to who you're writing for, or is it, or are there foundational things that you always keep the same?
That's a really great question. And I think my answer there would only be process. And that depends on the size of the company, because the process is really different if you're working like say for, you know, a solo entrepreneur than if you are writing like B2B in a corporate space, for example, because there's going to be a different expectation of process. And in most situations, except for bigger clients, you know, people are really grateful for your process and happy for you to impose it on the project. In the bigger companies, they sometimes have a process they need you to plug into. Even small companies sometimes, like, you know, it may be their communication tool or the way that they like to process information or interact with you. And so it's a funny thing because I think on the one hand, clients really appreciate your process and it's important to bring it. And I think that's part of what the elevated experience is and what great clients' customer service is. At the same time, when people have their own things in-house, you got to be flexible somehow.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're so married to your process that you really don't want to work outside of it, like it's really that important to you, then those are obviously not going to be a fit. But otherwise, I think you have to allow some flexibility and figure out how you're going to, you know, how you're going to work with someone. Otherwise, I think the other things like the research and the writing, I think that's for most of us, I think we have a way that we do it and we have to stick to it.
Yeah.
I guess my only other caveat there is, and this, I know this is a little bit sideways, but I think, you know, very often we do the research at the beginning of the project, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of anticlimactic for the client because they sign up and they're all excited and it's like, okay, see, I'm going into my cake. I'll be back in a while because we have to unearth stuff before we start doing anything that we're ever going to show them.
Yeah.
And so just one note there is I think it's really important to let clients know about that part of the process.
Yeah.
In whatever situation you're in, because that's one place where things can really fall off mm-hmm. the map. And when it happens right in the beginning, it's just not a good setup for the project. So just make sure in that circumstance, whoever you're communicating with knows, you know, what you're doing. And I guess we're not really talking about that, but one more thing. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Communication is really important. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, I think of it like if you're in the kitchen cooking something, and you know how, especially I used to be a baker. I think you know this. I was in the baking business. When you're mixing something together, it looks like a mess until you get it baked, you get it finished. So it's like with copy, because I know with me, I mean, I just start doing all this research and throwing it into, you know, my process and plugging it in. But if anyone was to say, you know, it's like if you walk into the kitchen and I'm in the middle of making a cake like that, you'd be like, that looks awful. It's like, well, I'm not done. Just leave me alone. And I feel like that with when it comes to the copywriting process, like, there's so much that happens that I feel like most clients almost don't understand it. I think you kind of like said this in so many words, like you have to kind of keep in touch and say, okay, I mean, they know when you're interviewing their customers, but other than that, I mean, do you just touch base like once a week or something and say, hey, just letting you know things are moving along?
You know, I like to touch in the beginning and the end of the week, but I always ask a client too, like, what's your preferred communication style? Because I don't want to be littering their inbox with like, hi, this is what I'm doing if they don't give a rip, right? And they might not, in which case, you know, I will probably tell them on a Monday, hey, this is what I'm, you know, I'm working on this week. You know, here's how you can reach me, you know, and then I'll just go away till the following week. But I will tell them, you know, upfront in a project, I'll say, so, and I'll sort of joke, like, so this is great. You're going to sign this and I'm going to disappear. it's going to feel really unfulfilling, but here's the deal. And here's what I'm going to be doing. And, you know, and I just let them know. And so I said, it's like, it's a really awkward period because I'm excited, you're excited, but I'm going away. So, and that's when I find out, like, but I am going to be working on your stuff. So I'm going to have questions. Like, do you want me to send you questions as I have them? Do you want me to gang them up in an email I send you once a week or once a day? Or like, how available are you and what's going to be most comfortable? And because I really want to communicate with them. I want them to know that I'm working.
Yeah.
I don't want to be peppering them like they're my boss.
Right.
Right. Or that I'm reporting in. I just want them to feel taken care of. So, yeah.
I find that the hardest part for me is like, I'm such an introvert that I will get it done. I tell people like, it's going to get done. If I don't say anything, it doesn't mean I'm not working on it. It's just, I keep everything to myself. So I have to remind myself, okay, check in, make sure that they know that I'm still here, you know?
And, you know, I think the problem is some people say that they're doing that and they're not. And if I'm first working with you as in like the first time, I don't know that you're doing what you say you do. And so that's why I want to hear from you. And then like after I hear from you a couple of times and I get how communicative you are, and then I've worked on a project with you and I know how good you are, I don't care anymore. But right. In the beginning, it's kind of like, ooh, like, you know, I mean, really, I noticed this. I really pay attention. Like, you know, what are they doing? Like, you know, because I don't trust them yet. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. And I've seen too many weird, flaky things that I never expected. So I'm very on the alert.
Yeah. I think copywriters are particularly prone to, I think any of the artsy sort of, any kind of creative tends to be, there's a lot of craziness.
You know, I'm going to do the work I do. Yes, I get it.
I once went to it was when I was in the fitness business. I wasn't yet doing copy. I was just starting to, and I met the marketing people from Bowflex. It was at a fitness conference, and I was introduced to the marketing person who's no longer there. But he talked to me for a while. We were joking. We had the same sense of humor. We were just like laughing it up. And he said to me, it's so nice to know a writer who's not crazy. He says, that's his exact words. He said, and he ended up hiring me for a whole bunch of projects. And it was because he got to know me a little bit. And this was as one-on-one as you can get. I mean, we're in person, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't know when you take on a client or when the client takes you on, you know, as a copywriter. I mean, there's always that. You have to kind of build that trust and it takes some time. And, you know, it's kind of scary.
I got to tell you, though, because you're so uber reliable and like, and so am I. So this, like, it just shocks me. But like, I've hired people who, like, I know them. And they're professionals and the quality of their work is outstanding. And the way that they, like, they just did flaky stuff, like really flaky stuff, like disappeared and didn't meet deadlines and didn't let me know. And I, like, to me, that's shocking behavior.
Me too. Yeah.
And, like, it's unprofessional behavior. And so, and it was from people I never would have in a million years expected that from. And so I just think it's something that we need to be aware of vis-a-vis our own clients, that they've had those experiences and that's why they're, you know, have a watchful eye. It's nothing, I mean, it's never personal, but it's why you want to like, just like show up and make a really good impression, especially with communication, because people are so bad at it.
And you set the expectations up front about the communication.
You know? Yes. Yeah. And I mean, you're right. Like, I mean, creatives, like we don't like fitting into molds. We don't like, you know, rules and structures a lot of the time, but the reason I'm doing the work I'm doing now is because it's like, if you're a creative freelancer and you don't have business skills, you just don't eat as well. And somebody who's mediocre who does. And it's just like, you know that, but you're a natural. Like, I don't know.
I've always been an entrepreneur. Like, I can't imagine working for somebody else. Like, I'm one of those, you know, when I was a kid, I wasn't even selling lemonade because even back then I knew that that was too, you know, everyone was doing it. I sold creepy crawlers. You know, those things like back in the, what year that was? It was way too long ago. Back in the Jurassic era. But yeah, and I recently came across a picture of myself, my dad had taken of me at this booth selling these like fake bugs. I mean, I don't know.
I would love to see that.
I need to dig that up. But the only time I've ever worked for somebody else is when I had a side hustle. Like I could just not work for somebody.
I love the entrepreneurial kids though. I sold greeting cards door to door. Yeah. I was like, you know, the thing from like back of the comic books, they sent you sample packs and you go, I mean, like who could resist a little kid at the door? You can say no. I mean, I wasn't trying to be manipulative. I was just like, I was industrious.
Yeah. Did you always love writing? Because I've always loved it. Like even
always.
Always. It's one of those inborn things. Like I used to, we had a company that used to sell books to our classes. Like when we were little, I was only one of like maybe five kids in the class who would order these books. I was obsessed with books to the point where I got like reprimanded more than once for hiding my book behind the book I'm supposed to be actually reading and just reading my own thing. And the teacher would come over and take it and say, we'll give this to you after class. I was so excited to get these books. And, you know, it's always been like that. So
me too. But that was like the most exciting day at school when the books came. You got to order these big stacks of books. Oh, yeah. And it was better than the library because you own them.
Isn't that funny? See, we remember. Oh my gosh. Well, so how do you know that maybe it's time for you to niche down? Like if somebody is a writer, I pose that question to you. You know, it's like, I'm doing this work and I don't know, maybe I should go into more fitness. And you said, absolutely. Like, when do you know that maybe it's time to do that?
I think there's one of two things. One is either you're being repeatedly asked for something, like for a thing. So it's niching in the, you know, again, in like in the thing. Or you're finding that you're repeatedly working with the same type of people and you like it because maybe it's a referral. You know, you get in with one client, you do well, and they know other people in the same space. So I think when there's like a repeated knock on your door, it's time. I think the other time is when you get a hankering, like when something is feeling, and it's not, niching isn't always the answer, but when something's feeling incongruous or you're feeling a little antsy, kind of like you were, and you've got this. It's for, like for you in your case, it's almost like coming. Well, it is. It's coming back to your roots. But it's when you know, there's this little feeling here, like it's something that you love. It's something that you're passionate about, and you're like, there's just this like it's kind of rising up. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's like in your current profession, it's time to go back to that. And you're thinking about it and thinking about it. It's like it's knocking on your door.
Yeah.
You know, and so if you think about it once, maybe not, but if it keeps knocking on your door and you keep thinking about it, you know, there's usually a reason. And sometimes, sometimes it's your passion, but it can also be that you're responding to what you're seeing in the marketplace.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I think those are two really good instincts.
Yeah. For me, I was so burned out from fitness, but it was from writing 1,000 articles about 10 ways to walk off the weight. I mean, I couldn't take it anymore. And then I would have, you know, editors saying, we need a fresh approach to this. And it's been done so many times. And I just said, you know what, I need to go on to something else. But then when I looked at it from a copywriting perspective, and I was having clients come to me because they knew I had the fitness background, even though I wasn't talking about it, for me, that was like you said, when people are knocking on your door, I'm like, you know, I know that you know this field. So it's like, okay, maybe I can do this again. But I had to take a break from it. But then I realized, you know, I'm wasting so many years of my expertise. I mean, I've been on panels where I was the expert, fitness expert, you know. So, you know, that's why I'm going back. I went back.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about, like you talked earlier, about all those bylines and getting attention. And like, I mean, those bylines are still valid, I'm guessing. And I'm betting you can get more. And like, I know something really lit up for me when you said, oh, and I could get anyone to answer me, or, you know, people who, you know, wouldn't, it's like, oh, hello.
but the reason I got out of the whole article magazine writing was just because of the way the business was going. I mean, all those magazines, so many have folded. And then the ones that are online were paying literally like 25% of what I was getting. You know, I was averaging, you know, a couple thousand dollars for your average size article. About $1 a word. It was like they paid per word for most of these magazines, unless it was Reader's Digest, which was like $5 a word, which I never got into, but holy cow. That was like the, you know, the one
golden goose of
everyone wanted to get into Reader's Digest because of that. But one last question about So if you're switching into a different niche, what if your portfolio doesn't reflect that? Like, so say I have a couple of health and fitness clients, but not all of it. Like, what do you suggest for someone who's doesn't have any clips or anything?
Yeah, yeah, I just really think the portfolio is overrated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think the copywriter cares a lot more about it than the client does. And my feeling has always been like a client really doesn't know how to evaluate a portfolio, mm-hmm. right? Like they can look and see, oh, you work for XYZ or you've written this type of thing, but they don't know how to know whether your work is good. So I always, with some exceptions, I mean, I don't want to say that like as a blanket statement, but I've always felt like it's a thing for a newer person. Like you want to prove you're legit, like other people have hired me. Like for someone of your caliber, you know, I'd be way more inclined to do something like, and you have all those bylines, you know, well, I don't know. Some of them magazines are defunct. Maybe they won't be as impressive, but you know, having written for this, having done that, my background is this, here's why I'm pivoting over here. I mean, I would like, if I were you, I'd be positioning as like, hey, I've got this depth of knowledge in both spaces, right? The conversion copy space and the fitness space. And like you'd be, you know, like lucky you, here I am. Lucky you that I'm coming back to this space, because I think that's way more valuable than a portfolio. Like it could even be like an information piece. Like, hey, here's who I am. Here's how I solve your problems. Not a fan of the portfolio. I guess you can tell.
I'm so glad you said that, because there was something, and I don't know if Joanna Weeb had said it, because I'm in the Slack group with all of us still, where if you send your portfolio link and somebody doesn't understand what to look for, it could be a negative thing. Because I have sent my portfolio to people and never heard back, and I was hesitant about doing it because I knew that what they were looking for was different. And if someone doesn't know how to see it, you know, how to view it, I think it's really, even emails, because I had an email that converted for this one client like crazy. But he wanted kind of a snarky, and it was funny because it was a SaaS company, but he wanted something funny. And I told, when I would send this, people were like, can I see a sample? Like, well, this is, I took redacted the name of the company and everything, but I said they wanted something that was humorous. And I just was hesitant, and I haven't had luck sending those out. And so I think you're right. You know, that makes a lot of sense. People don't.
Yeah. And I mean, I would even say, like, if someone says, well, do you have a portfolio? I'd say, I've done a ton of work, but like, I don't know that any of it's relevant to what you want done. So let's talk about what you want it done. I mean, I'm happy to show you lots of proof and happy clients, all of that. But like, no, I don't have an assembled body of work because I just explained it. I almost am dismissive of it because I really don't feel it's in their best interest. And I don't know that they know that. You know, maybe they're asked, someone said, oh, well, if you're talking to copywriters, ask to see their portfolio. And they're like, great. I got all these portfolios on my hard drive. I don't know what to do with them. So
yeah, they don't know what to look for. Yeah.
I'm being a little cynical, but nonetheless, I do feel that way.
I agree. And I think I've heard that also from other copywriters, that they think that they've lost jobs because of the portfolio did not reflect what the client was looking for, and that they never heard anything, because that's happened to me. And I don't know if it was a portfolio. I really don't, but I get the feeling it could have been a factor. She hasn't written for us. So.
Right.
But yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the coaching that you do and where people can find you? And I have said in your intro that you've coached me over the years, so I'm happy to promote you.
Well, thanks. So, Shane, I do offer one-on-one coaching. I have a coaching on demand service. You use that, it's just show up, let's sort through things. I take people on in like 3 month stints too, to like solve a bigger tech level, bigger challenge. But what I've done most recently, and I've been running masterminds for years and group programs, and I decided last year. It was last year that I wanted to take all of that accumulated knowledge and try and package it up somehow, like in an off the shelf kind of mastermind. Mm-hmm. So that's been my big project. I built something called Complete Breakthrough Freelancer. It's hard to say, but I'm really excited about this idea of helping craftspeople have understand like some basic business skills so they can eat better and earn more money, basically. My thing is I do it in a way that's really approachable, right? I'm not an MBA. I'm not a businessy, financy person. I'm a real scrappy nuts and bolts. You know, I've been in the trenches. Let me show you what to do. And so I've kind of taken the mastermind. It's like, it was an $8,500 mastermind. This is the mastermind in a box minus the $8,000. That's
a great deal. So is it productized? So is it something that do you do it on your own?
Yeah, it's a self-serve course, really, but it's also designed to be a reference library because I've broken it up. And most of the videos are less than 5 minutes, but it's really easy to access. So I have like sort of foundational stuff you need to understand, then how to market, how to position, how to find clients, who are your clients. But they're all pithy, but it's also designed because it's funny, like you and I are having this conversation. You've niched and you're re-niching and you'll niche again, maybe. And so it's designed so you can revisit all the content, like, oh, niching, like, what do I do again? Or how should I think about this? Oh, my positioning, or maybe your goals changed or whatever. So, I've designed it. It can also be a resource. So I don't know. I may moosh around with the positioning over time because I don't know how it'll be best received, but I've positioned it so it's really accessible because I just want to make this change in the marketplace. It drives me crazy. It just does. I can't help enough people one-on-one. It's too expensive. And by the time you can spend that, you've worked out a lot of the fundamentals where if you do it early, you could save time, or you do it later, you can save heartache. So there
so
you have it.
It's available now, right?
It's available now. Yeah. It's at my site, amypostman.com.
I'll put a link to it in the show notes and that'll be great. And I highly recommend you to everyone. So I'm so glad you're doing this. This is great. All right. Awesome. Anywhere else people can reach you? You're on LinkedIn. Anything?
Yeah. I hang out a lot on LinkedIn. I'm there to answer questions and I do. I'm really accessible. I'm Business Growth Mentor, I think is my handle at LinkedIn. So come hang out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Amy. This has been a lot of fun.
And that's a wrap for today's episode. We hope you found it informative, thought-provoking, and engaging. If so, please share it with your friends and colleagues who might also be interested in marketing and copywriting trends and innovations. And remember, if you haven't already, please subscribe to the B2B Marketing and Copywriting Podcast on your favorite podcast platform and on our YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. We'll be back next week with another show, so stay tuned.